Welcome to day two of the WSET Diploma Student Summit 2021. Continuing to connect past graduates with current students, helping to pass on the knowledge and experience they gained on their way to prize-winning performances. Today's guest, Tatiana Livesey, is a double award winner, achieving consistently high grades overall in her diploma, as well as excelling in her fortified exam. Tatiana shares her origin story and discovery of the wine world, talks us through her qualification journey with the WSET and the transition from level 3 to level 4, before receiving an early wake-up call on her exam journey. She discusses the Lustau Prize she won for the fortifying exam, talks learning styles, the power of Excel, preparation for the tasting component, the Wine Trade Club Patent Prize, links between the diploma and her current role, and finally on using podcasts to prepare for the diploma. Enjoy.
My story with wine, I suppose, started when I was born. I was born in Moldova, which is a small winemaking country. Its history goes all the way back 3,000-4,000 years ago. And somewhere those wine genes were asleep in me until I went purely by accident to Napa Valley in 2011. At the time, I was working in investment banking. My hours were 120 hours a week. I was working day and night, flying to Moscow every week, and I was getting really bored of it. We were supposed to go to Japan for holiday in March to see the cherry blossom, and the same week the tsunami happened, so we didn't go. We ended up going to California instead. It was a very last-minute decision, and I ended up in Napa Valley in California visiting these wineries, meeting people, meeting the winery dogs, which made a huge impact on me. I tried some wines that I didn't believe could taste so good. I mean, back in London, I used to drink cocktails and Pinot Grigio, believe it or not. I'm horrified. But those were the days. It was an easy wine to find in the supermarket on the way home. So, I was so taken by wine tourism and wine regions and wine travel. When I came back to London, I enrolled into the WCT program. I did the level 2 online, and I did level 3 very quickly. And then I started a wine and travel company with my business partner. I have exited this year. The conditions for wine travel are not great at the moment. So, there was an interesting experience, a startup experience, but I really realized that I love learning about wine because it's more about learning about history, culture, geology, climate, and it just goes on. So I do love being a wine educator and a communicator, and I've completed diploma in wines and spirits at the beginning of 2020, and since then, due to the current conditions, as we know, COVID, been working from home and been doing dozens of virtual wine tastings for corporates. So I really actually enjoy that because it not only gives me the platform to remember what I've learned, but it gives me the platform to learn about consumers and educate them in the structured way or in a fun way.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that story. I think, you know, the wine bug gets you through one of those different channels, through the region, through the language, and once it has you, I don't think it sort of lets you go. One thing that I think is interesting for me, just in terms of the way that wine education works, if you do it the WSET way, is that, you know, right through five, I would say really levels 1, 2, and 3 are, you know, reasonably manageable. These are things that, you know, they're perhaps easier to fit in alongside other work and family life. And it feels to me as though there's a significant step up in terms of the commitment required to go from level 3 to level 4. So I'm just curious, given again that it's all behind you and that it's all turned out very well,
Just to ask you to reflect a little bit on that choice, really, that decision to go from three to four. Was it sort of a no-brainer for you based on what had, you know, could have come to be such a huge part of your life, or was there a lot of deliberation around taking that step?
Thank you. I think when people go to do the level four diploma level, they do it for career reasons, sometimes personal reasons. What I loved at that level three, I met people from all kind of backgrounds, from banking, lawyers, and so on. And when we moved on to level four, it was a little bit more focused on wine, but you still every now and then get people from different areas. What really motivated me, and I had a five-year gap between completing my level three and diploma, I always wanted to do it. I never really quite had the time because I was working full-time on my company. I've just had at the time twin boys, and I was going a little bit mental at home, and I wanted to do something for myself. And as crazy as it sounds, they were only 6 months old when I enrolled in the diploma. And I chose the Friday course because I really wanted to have one day a week when it's not about babies. It's just about me doing my stuff, learning about wine, meeting people. And, you know, it was such a mental break. Not only was I learning about wine and working towards this degree, which will help my career as well in the future, I was having a day off from the kids. So I arranged the childcare arrangements as such to allow me to do that. So Friday was my favorite day of the week. I couldn't wait for it. And I think this is why I really enjoyed the degree, because just looking towards that course and meeting the same group of people and going for a drink afterwards, creating a study group, you know, supporting each other, gave me so much more support that I needed at the time. So that was my personal experience. And I know everyone's way is different. Now, when the exams came, this is when I thought, wow, this is like, you know, the shit hit the fan situation for me, because I haven't been in an exam conditions like so since 2006 when I left university. And this is when I really needed more support at home with the children, because I thought I'm just going to breeze through the exams just like I went to my Friday courses, but it was a very different experience. And after my first exam, I realized that I needed to step up my exam preparation. Yeah, so the first exam was what we called it, Unit 2, the wine production exam. So I only had 1 month to study for this exam. So the course started at the beginning of September. The exam was already scheduled for beginning of October. And at the time, it was a multiple choice exam. And I literally read the book once, highlighted what I needed. I did the test mock exam online twice, and I went to the exam. Now, I did pass that exam, but I only just passed it. I didn't get like an amazing grade on it. And then having looked at some of the questions that I got wrong, I thought, you know, this was very silly. And now that I've completed all the courses, now looking back, I think Unit 2 was the foundation and the one a lot of the people skip and miss. Like, without Unit 2, you're not going to pass Unit 3 or D3, as they call it. You need to have those cheat sheets and winemaking stories written down on your paper and in your head, your wine, white wine making, your red wine making, rosé wine making, sweet wine making, fortified wine making. Just memorize them and repeat and repeat, because those come across in every unit of your studies pretty much. So if you don't nail those from the very beginning, you're not going to do very well later on. Yeah, so that was my experience. I think Unit 2, I realized that actually that was the easy one. This was the multiple choice one. From now on, we're going to have to answer open questions, and you need to know a lot more detail compared to some multiple choice questions. So that was a little bit of a wake-up call.
Again, you know, this is all sort of with hindsight, but was it? It sounds as though it may have been a case of, even though it was an exam that you'd passed and you know, technically could sort of move on from, you actually took the time to make those connections and realize, hold on, you know, I need to do more work there. This is going to help me as I move forward. This isn't just something, a stepping stone.
Yes, ironically, my next exam was the fortified exam in January. And this is actually when I went and solidified my winemaking knowledge completely, because I realized that I completely skimmed that through the first time around. So, you know, we didn't have much time to prepare for D1 at the time. We weren't given much time. But I think looking back at it, we should have all spent a little bit more time to learn these things, and also structure your way of studying. So the seven factors that you're mentioning in D1, they come again in every other unit. So whenever I started for a new region or a new unit, I'd always think about the seven factors. There are your climate, your weather, your soil, your grapes, your viticulture, winemaking, and market or producers. So it always helped to just think about those seven factors and try to fill in the gaps from my knowledge, and basically go to the books and online resources and try to write an answer, model answer for it. When I did it, I was probably one of the last few people to do the old structure exam. So we finished with the spirits. So we didn't transition as such from the old to the new style. Now I've had a look at how it compared. When we did it, it was 600 hours required of studying, but involved also spirits, remember? And now I think they require 500 hours of studying. But again, D3 is the monster exam, still 50% of your grade. And the other ones are split between 5 and 10 and 20%.
Great to be finally speaking to you on the podcast. You know, we've met loads at different tastings, and you know, not for a little while yet. But I think, you know, one of the things that again sort of brought you back to my awareness when I knew I was putting together the series was the fact that you'd won a couple of awards across your diploma career. So I'd really just invite you to, I guess, focus firstly on the first prize that you won, which was back in 2019 and was for the then Unit 6, looking at fortified. So, yeah, I just, as I say, you know, maybe just tell us a little bit about, yeah, really your approach to that exam. And then obviously it having turned out very well, take us through and talk a little bit about the prize that was awarded to you for that performance.
Thank you. I was very shocked when I was told I was awarded an award, the Sherry Award, because when I started this degree, I knew nothing about Sherry. And I knew I had a huge steep learning curve. I think a lot of people will be in my shoes and not know much about fortified wines. At the time, I have had been to Porto. So I knew a lot about port because, and I realized how important it was to go to wine region. And I said to my husband, you know, I am so scared of this exam. I barely scraped through the first exam, and I've learned my experience. I need to really step it up here. What do you think we go for the weekend to Jerez? We were like, okay, you know, again, we find a childcare. We went, it was beautiful weather. It was just before my exam, I think, in January, February, so it was quite mild. We visited several bodegas over the weekend, and, you know, it all made sense to me. All the criaderas, all the different styles of sherry. Now, all those words I read in the book just made sense. I actually loved sherry after that experience. My husband didn't, still doesn't, and I prove him wrong every time I open the bottle. In fact, my love of sherry is only growing at the moment. I just realized I love all salty notes. So when I came back to London, I did the blind tastings that the booklet recommended, so putting different styles of fortified side by side, so that involves the ports, the Madeiras, the VDNs, and the sherries. I asked some neighbors to come about to help me get through them. And remember, the great thing about these wines is they do keep quite well. So you can get the small tasting samples, but you can also buy the bigger bottles because they will last for several weeks, if not months, depending on the wine. What I've realized in the other units after unit two was that I really needed to make the connection between a style and quality and the region and really explain that. So the combining the theory with blind tasting really helped me understand the style of the wine, and but also go back and understand the climate, the soil, you know, the winemaking in more detail. So it was a little bit reverse process the second time around, and I realized that the blind tastings helped me so much. So I did study a lot for that unit just because I was terrified of the fortified exam. And, you know, with a bit of luck, I passed and managed to get a good grade and was awarded a trophy. So there was just a little bit of a success story for me that it is absolutely doable if you put the time into it. So I tried to use a very similar approach with the other exams. Of course, Unit 3D3, which is 50% of the grade, requires 250, 300 hours of studying, was a very different story. But I've had such a positive experience doing the fortified studying that I love the sherries and the Madeiras and the port now.
One of the elements that came up in the first interview of the series was actually talking about learning styles. I'm just wondering, the way that you've sort of described that there was that, you know, you had obviously the experiential side in terms of being there and walking in the bodegas and meeting the people and seeing the barrels and then the blind tasting and then the sort of the time spent with the books. And I'm just wondering, you know, on reflection, you know, does that sort of, you know, did you try to think about what is your own specific way to learn, your best way to learn? Is that something that you sort of knew before from other experiences, or is this something that you were sort of developing as you evolved through?
Yes, that's exactly right. I realized that I was out of practice from studying for exams for 12 years now. So I went back to learning more about exam technique. Now, you can know your theory really well and have a complete panic moment during the exam. I've often seen people leave early, and I never understood why wouldn't you take the whole time allotted to you to finish a paper. So I, when I started to study for the fortified exam, which was my first unit exam, I went to the examiner's reports and started to look at previous questions. And I looked at the theory questions and I looked at the tasting questions, and I started to understand what they wanted from you. And a theme that came every time was they wanted you to talk about the connection between the style and the region, quality and price. They wanted you to have a very good conclusion in your blind tasting notes. So practicing writing a concise conclusion that doesn't mention why this wine is outstanding. It mentions factors that you said before, like, for example, the balance between alcohol and sugar and acidity, the intensity and concentration of flavor. So when you explain everything you already said above, you know, you add those extra points, and the conclusion for your blind tastings is quite a big part of the grade. So even if you don't get the wine 100% right, you can still earn these points by memorizing and writing the SAT terms, and also writing a model conclusion for a very good, outstanding, and just a good wine. So just doing that exam technique. Also on the theory part, which was sometimes even scarier because you never knew what the question might be, remember that each question is the same percentage of your grade. So if you spend 15 minutes on one question and 5 minutes on the other, you're probably missing very important points on the second question because they're graded the same. So there's no sense to write the kitchen sink in one answer and write absolutely nothing in the second one. So try to really structure in the exam, practice at home, your timing. So no more than 8-10 minutes per question. Ideally 8 minutes, and then you use whatever time is left to come and check your answers and add whatever. And one good tip I was told, and this is true of every exam, if you write your plan, that usually gets you just 1 point. So if you start writing your theory question, you write, you know, I'm going to talk about the 7 factors and list them, and I'm going to talk about these producers. That usually just gives you a point because you're outlining what you're going to talk about. You have a structure. So yes, exam technique, I cannot stress that enough. Looking back at past papers, trying mock exams, and just getting in the practice of being in an exam condition and also within time frame.
The word that kind of comes to mind is that you, in your preparations, you were quite meticulous. It sounds as though you were fairly structured in terms of the way that you went about preparing.
Yes, and I, having worked in finance, I was a bit of an Excel geek, so I had spreadsheets for each unit, and within the spreadsheet, I had tabs for countries, especially when it got to D3. Each country, I had list of questions, of previous questions, what year, and so on. I had tabs for grapes and cheat sheets for grapes, and I knew, for example, when was the last time a question on Riesling asked. If it was just, you know, the previous time, I'm probably not going to have a Riesling question, right? It's just a little bit of, you know, a logic and sense. You might get asked, but no, probably not, because they've only just asked it. Mm-hmm. So Excel helped me a lot. It was my biggest friend to get me organized in my learning. So I would always spend about a month studying the theory, the blind tasting for the small units. And the week before the exams, I would only just do mock exams and focus on my spreadsheets and the previous questions.
Rightly or wrongly, I didn't get a sense of exactly how you'd scheduled out the tasting. You know, how do you know when you've done enough? How much of it should be done blind? I'm just curious, yeah, given your preparation of the other areas, could you say something about how you went about scheduling the tasting?
So the tastings at the time, we had a study group about six of eight people. Usually six of us would turn up every Friday and we would start talking about theory. We'd have two topics, two countries usually to talk about, exchange notes and maybe talk one or two more questions. And then we'd move on to our favorite part, which involved the blind tasting. So every person would bring one or two bottles depending on the format. And we would taste this blind. It would always be a wine that would be on a recommended list. And not only was that helpful to get through many styles, but it also helped us to calibrate our palates. Because here you have six or eight people, we are talking, is the acidity high, medium minus, medium plus, you know, and alcohol the same. So we're really all calibrating our palates and learning from each other how to do that. So that was one. The study group really helped, which, and I appreciate it was really difficult during COVID to do that. So at home, I had a Coravan. I invested in the Coravan system, and I used it quite a lot. And I tried to have different bottles and ask my husband to choose two bottles and Coravan me two glasses. And that really helped. Buying a lot of wine and caravanning. So unfortunately, you know, there's no easy way on the second part. You will have to invest in some wine and do that. So I think currently you can buy some smaller samples also. There are a lot of virtual tastings and packages online due to COVID at the moment. So you can probably look into this. I know a few companies do it, like the online wine tasting club, 67 Pall Mall do it. So the small samples, and you can do the webinar, or you can do it blind at home and watch the webinar later, whatever works for you. There are ways around it, I have to say. So there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Brilliant that you've taken us into, I think, the fortified experience, and you know, really quite surprising for me that you, as you say, you went from somebody who didn't really know too much about fortified and somebody who's you know, prize winner and actually has gone to visit. I think, you know, the challenge now is doing it in person, but I think, you know, for sherry only really began to make sense for me once I'd been there, once I'd actually tasted it in situ, once I'd met the people and kind of had that experience. I would say that there is there are ways to kind of approximate that, I would say, and my mind goes towards content. You know, I for example did a series of sherry interviews when I was down there, and I'll be happy to link that up below as we sort of started talking about fortified exams. I do also want to give you the opportunity to talk about the other prize that you won as well, being a double prize winner. being the Wine Trade Club Pattern Prize. Take us into a little bit around, you know, what were the criteria behind that, and how did it come to be, and what was the prize itself?
Yeah, so having won the Share Award 2019, I wasn't really expecting to win any more awards, and I was emailed and told that you've just won the Club Patron Awards. I looked it up, and it's basically a prize for an outstanding grade overall. So I obviously did quite well in my other exams, not as well as I did in the Sherry, obviously, and fortified exam. But I said, of course, yes, really, I loved it. And especially because it gave me the opportunity, it was a grant to go and research a wine region of my choice. So I got like a travel grant, and I have decided to go to South Africa and focus on sustainability. That was what I was passionate at the beginning of the year. So unfortunately, I didn't go to South Africa because I was only awarded this in January. So COVID decided otherwise. But all prize winners have their prizes postponed until further notice, basically. So we will do this, what we initially intended. So I can still change my mind, I don't know, and go to New Zealand if I'm allowed. So that's the exciting thing about it, that I still have that to look forward to.
How does it work in terms of, like, are you just given sort of a bursary and you know, a map and a pin, and you just have to select the place, or is there a sort of a slightly more structured discussion around, you know, how you want to get the most out of this fantastic opportunity?
It's essentially a money travel voucher, if you like, and I have to make my own schedule and my own itinerary, who I meet. So anything above that, I will have to pay from my own pocket. But luckily, I have already done the research on South Africa. I've connected, and I know so many amazing producers, like Ken Forrester, which I can't wait to visit. He's a dear friend as well. And I know that I will be in good hands and well looked after, and if I do go ahead with that. So I'm pretty sure, you know, all the expenses together will be above the grand, but it doesn't matter. It's still a worthwhile experience, especially because I haven't traveled that much during my studies just because of having a young family to look after. So I think the Sherry trip was a one-off, and I managed to get a prize. And I thought, wow, if I managed to go to many other regions, I could have done probably, you know, even better. But having been to Jerez, there was a slightly different experience. There was one producer, there was Emilia Lustau, who hosted me, and they were the best hosts. I have such amazing memories. I came to my hotel room in Jerez, and there were two flamenco dresses on my bed, and I nearly fell off my feet. I was supposed to wear one of the dresses the next day for the Feria de Jerez. It was about 35 degrees. I had to learn to dance and drink sherry. And nobody told me lunch was at 5 o'clock. By that point, I was famished and fainting. And we finished at like 1 a.m. I mean, those experiences, you know, you can't replace with virtual trips online. So, yes, I look forward to do that again.
I wonder if, you know, given that, you know, you do, and you have transitioned now into working in the wine trade, I'm just wondering, when you get that opportunity for that travel grant and that experience, do you sort of approach it with a work head on and think that this is something that will kind of help me move, you know, forward in my career? Or is this, you know, more a sort of, as you say, a sort of a more of a passion, more of a kind of, okay, I haven't necessarily had the opportunity to travel so much, so this is kind of just something that I just love, and, you know, if it helps with the work, then so be it.
I think the way I think about it, I think about the topics that I'm most passionate at the moment. And this year we have had a few topics that, you know, have been brought to our attention. I mean, sustainability was already there at the top of my agenda at the beginning of the year. And since then we've also added, you know, diversity and inclusion, hospitality. So Mm-hmm. Yes, I will take all of this into considerations. I still think that South Africa is a good candidate because they were among the first wine countries in the world to pioneer sustainability and fair trade stickers and certain certifications. They're doing an amazing job in employing Black people in the industry. Also, about 3% of the wineries in South Africa are Black owned. So these are all topics on my agenda. And when I look at the countries allowing me to visit to really explore this topic, South Africa is still there at the top. Now, at the end of the grant as such, on each prize, you do have to come back and write a paper. This is one of the criteria. So you want you to write a paper. So I did write a paper on sherry and the effect of climate change on sherry and winemaking styles. So yes, there is definitely a sense of topic that I'm passionate about. And I think it's a topic to stay in the industry in the coming years. A crisis like COVID will accelerate certain trends. And this is one of the trends towards better, I believe, to achieving sustainability certifications and focusing more on diversity and inclusion. So yes, I really can't wait to visit and learn from what they have achieved and come and write a paper on it.
Really, last couple of questions from me. I think, I'd sort of invite you to take our story and your story really is right up to date. And I guess, you know, maybe in the cold light of day now that you've come out the other side. I mean, yeah, just to make that connection back to the diploma and kind of what it's given you and link it together with what you're doing at present. You are currently employed in wine trade.
Yeah, so I really loved my diploma experience. I'd happily do it again, and I really miss the classes we had at London Bridge, my colleagues and the study groups. Even the exam pressure was sometimes exciting, you know, on finding at the end you passed and celebrating with a bottle of champagne. So I think people are having a ride doing this degree. It's an amazing degree. And it did give me a platform of structured education and a platform to unexpectedly become an educator in 2020 and doing corporate virtual wine tastings, offering, ad hoc education courses. I also work as a brand ambassador for a Californian winery, Perus, which is based in Napa, which was my first love when I first fell in love with wine properly. And I got the wine bug. So, you know, I did connect the dots from where I started and what I do now. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying it because it gives me the flexibility to work from home. Also, you know, have a good work-life balance with family and the kids. And this year I only did a couple of face-to-face events for Paris as a brand ambassador because of the current conditions, but, you know, it just meant that we had to focus on restructuring, do a lot more things online. So, yes, it's an amazing platform to start, and I think the options are endless on what you can do with a diploma afterwards.
Okay, yeah, it feels almost like that, yeah. You getting the education, in a sense, you know, talking about those online, it just, yeah, it gives you the structure and then for you to then, obviously you're not going to be, teaching a diploma level online tasting, but it at least gives you those different levels. And I'm sure as well, a lot of confidence, you know, if you get the people who want to sort of show off a bit or, test your knowledge, you know that you've got it in the back if needs be.
I think with my virtual tastings, I did, people ask me, how do you know so much about wine? I'm like, you know, I did a degree, you know, it's not just a hobby. I think many times people see pictures of wine or drinking on social media and they think it's just, you know, a hobby. And it's probably, they think it's the best hobby in the world or the best kind of work in the world, drinking wine. It's a lot of the time it's more to it than it looks. You know, there's a lot of research involved, a lot of writing, tasting notes, more research and then spitting. So it doesn't actually look that simple and that easy. I spent 600 hours studying for the diploma. So, you know, I am, I suppose, reaping the benefits now.
Final question for me, and I think it's something that I will ask all the guests, really, seeing the time in which this will be broadcast and potentially people who are looking ahead to the January 2021 exams will potentially be listening to this with kind of just a few days to take on board any advice. But then I believe as well there'll be people who've got exams potentially, you know, with some months ahead of them to kind of think about what you said there. And I'm just curious, you know, what might be the different advice you'd give to those groups, the people who were sort of a week out from the exam, 3 months out from the exam, and again, potentially bringing in and reflecting on, you know, some of the things that you found a struggle in your path to becoming a qualified diploma holder.
Well, big question. Excellent questions. Well, I know about the last minute nerves before an exam, and I still have some students who come to me and say, oh, you know, I think I'm not going to go for it because I just haven't learned enough. I haven't had the time. I feel stressed. And I always say it's worth just trying. You know, you've already paid for it. At the worst, it's an experience, and it's an exam technique experience, or like a prop ticket as a mock exam, if you like. If you really feel that unconfident, what's the worst that can happen? You might even pass, you know, so always go for it. Treat it as an experience. As I said, you might pass. But if you're still on your 100 meters, there are still a few things you can do. You can take a past paper and look at it and try to do like a closed book condition and time yourself. Each question carries the same proportion of your grade, so make sure you don't spend more on one question than the other. Highlights, use a highlighter to highlight key words and key questions so you never get Poyak and Pomerol confused, which happened to a friend during our D3 exam. You know, so there are still a few last-minute tricks which you can do. And focus on maybe writing some flashcards at the last minute. You know, if you're struggling for time, if you're sitting having a lunch, you can still look at some flashcards in the meantime. And if you're doing a tasting paper, just have a model example of a conclusion to make sure that you're answering why the wine is outstanding or very good, mentioning the balance, the complexity, and making sure you're connecting all the dots on the structure to your conclusion. So just literally a little bit of polishing. And if you are 3 months away, that means you have more time. Work on reading as much as possible, also writing some regions and grapes examples. I had example sheets for about 10-15 grapes, and I would go back to them often. And Oz Clark's book, Wine and Grapes, helped me a lot with the knowledge, because he has a lot of the stats about and the history, and also talks about producers and styles. And speaking about producers, I think this was my weakest area when I prepared for the diploma, because I didn't come from a wine company or hospitality. So my knowledge of producers was really lacking. Dropping names in exams always adds points towards your grade if you can name a few producers. So I really had to speed up that knowledge. And what really helped me a lot were podcasts. Like your podcast, Lawrence, your interviews with winemakers were amazing. I would scroll through the list, and you have so many. I would look, okay, I really need to know about the producer in Alsace. And I'd listen to that. And I would already have a name in my head to drop a name if that question ever came up. And the best thing is that podcasts give you flexibility to listen to them whenever. So at the time, as I mentioned, I still had the baby. So if I were out and about or sleeping in the buggy, I'd spend half an hour to an hour listening to podcasts every day.
Thank you so much, Tatiana. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. And amazing to be able to pass on all of the tips that we discussed. If you're watching on the summit webpage, do see below for the timestamps that will let you navigate to any part of the episode. And if you're listening on your podcast player and would like full access to the summit materials, please visit interpretingwine.com/summit today. If you know somebody who would find the episode useful, please share the direct link with them, which is interpretingwine.com/439. And if you found it really useful, do please leave the episode an iTunes review on the same link, which will help more people find the episode. Next time on the WSET Diploma Student Summit, I speak with Derek Crooks. See you then.